There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Uh-huh.
Venus.
Why not? We've bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent music. Independent media, actually. But music too, why not? As well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riespinel, I'm your host. On today's program, selling out naming rights for your newsroom. My guest will be John Anderson, who I'm lucky enough to have back in the studio today to talk about the goings-on in the newsrooms in his old hometown of Madison, Wisconsin. We'll also catch up on the Count of Pirate Bus, NPR's coverage of Florida Pirates, and Iowans who are working for better TV. All that, it's a jam-packed show. Do stay tuned. Well, John, welcome. Thanks for joining me yet again. Well, one thing I want to mention right off the top, which I got at the end of my little intro here, is I talked to some folks from Iowans for Better Local TV a couple of months ago, and we discussed this on the show, and they have now filed a challenge with the FCC against KGAN-TV Channel 2 there in Des Moines, which is owned by the wonderful Sinclair Broadcast Group, which came to prominence in 2004, especially during the 2004 presidential campaign. And they're challenging the station's license. And the FCC goes through license renewals on TV stations on this rotating state-by-state basis. And 2005 was the year for Illinois and for Iowa. And so they're just getting this in under the wire to challenge this channel. And they're doing so because they believe that the station is no longer serving the needs of their local community. And they got 500 citizens from over 80 towns and cities in Iowa to join in on this petition to the FCC.
Including former FCC Commissioner Nicholas Johnson.
Yes.
A native Iowan, I think.
A native Iowan, yes. He has been part of this campaign. And this is interesting. I mean, Sinclair it made itself really stuck out and really, I think, alerted many more people across the country to how their local TV stations are not locally owned. A lot of people, I guess, have gotten used to the notion that they're radio stations with the prominence of Clear Channel and Infinity, but no one looked at TV quite as much. And Sinclair is the largest owner of TV stations, at least in terms of the number of stations owned. They're not largest in terms of audience share because they tend to focus on medium-sized markets, Champaign,
right.
Urbana, Des Moines, Baltimore, Maryland, throughout the country. But they have a very Clear Channel approach to their coverage in that they... In a lot of places, they shut down newsrooms and have reopened the newsrooms with the skeleton crew locally running what they call News Central,
right,
which is actually a so-called local broadcast out of Baltimore County in Maryland. They've not done that yet here in Central Illinois, where they own two stations, Channel 20 in Springfield, WICS, and Channel 15, WICD, in Champaign-Urbana. But many people believe it's only a matter of time at this moment because the station's recently flipped affiliation to ABC this fall. And one of the reasons behind that here within the industry is because NBC, which is their previous affiliation, did not like News Central and did not want to have its affiliates airing that. They want their affiliates to air real local news, not the News Central program.
Yeah.
And a similar thing is happening... of course, in Des Moines, Iowa. And the most interesting thing, I think, about the situation... Actually, I'm sorry. It's actually Cedar Rapids.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It's not Des Moines. Cedar Rapids, the great city of Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Interesting thing about Sinclair, and it seems like most people react to with regard to Sinclair is Mark Hyman.
Yes, The Point.
The Point. And so for folks who do not have a Sinclair station, you've probably not seen it, but it is a commentary that airs after the local news, right at the end of the local news, called The Point with Mark Hyman, who is VP. He's also still Special Forces in the military. He's on reserve, but has been in Iraq as Special Forces on reserve, where he also did reportage to bring people the unreported positive stories out of Iraq.
He did that earlier this year
And gives these very reactionary right-wing one-minute commentaries, to which no one has a right to reply. He does not air any critical or any counter commentaries, just his own. And that seems to be the thing which people reacted to most strongly about, I think it was about a year ago, right before the election, there was a protest here in Champaign-Urbana at the local Sinclair affiliate over its airing of the program that was critical of John Kerry's military service.
Yeah, they were...
The Swift Vote.
They were initially going to run a documentary called Stolen Honor.
Yeah.
And the documentary was incredibly, horribly biased. And at the last minute, instead, they hacked together this very cheesy montage of footage from Stolen Honor, interspersed with an anchor standing in an empty newsroom talking about the First Amendment and its wonderfulness.
Yeah. So there was a local protest, and we talked to a bunch of people on the street, and a lot of people really had no clue about who owned the station or what, and really didn't have strong feelings, interestingly, about the news content or quality, since I think people have come not to expect very much of their local news to begin with. Local news, TV news, has never really been good, and it's kind of a fantasy that it ever was particularly good, because it's always been kind of a cheap affair. Radio news was often much better in 25, 30 years ago. But everyone had seen Mark Hyman, and everyone reacted very strongly to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because here's this guy who doesn't live nearby, and I think that's what people most notice, that this guy can't be from Champaign-Urbana, or this guy can't be from Cedar Rapids. He doesn't sound like he's from Cedar Rapids. He talks about, these reactionary right-wing commentaries about schools in Michigan or whatever thing. So things aren't even remotely of interest, really, to people in the local community. And that was the first little bell went off. This is not a local company. They're not serving our local interests. Mm-hmm. And furthermore, they have a clear political agenda. And the other thing that in earlier 2004 that Sinclair became well known for was telling their affiliates not to air Nightline on the night when the entire program was made up of scrolling the names of the American dead in Iraq.
Right.
That was when they first came up. People really became on the national scene aware of Sinclair. And so it makes sense that they would single out Sinclair Station there in Iowa to challenge on license. So this is something which all citizens, as well as other companies, have the right to do. Although, quite frankly, rarely is a license challenge successful, except in the case of really egregious violations, such as technical violations, or say the owner turns out to be a child molester or something like that.
Right. This follows a similar mass challenge of licenses to TV stations in Chicago and Milwaukee, filed by the Media Access Project and our friends up at the Chicago Media Action.
Chicago Media Action was in on that as well, yes.
For much of the same reason, the fact that local news isn't really all that local, but also just for the fact that even when local news was local, it really wasn't important.
Mm-hmm.
Less than 1% of their coverage was devoted to any sort of public affairs or things
like that.
And
especially they looked at the election time.
This is an interesting trend to watch develop, because it shows how media reformers are kind of becoming activated and actually filing paperwork to try to, at least maybe in a symbolic gesture, demonstrate dissatisfaction when, for the last, 20 years or so, the license renewal process has been pretty much nothing more than sending in a postcard and running some announcements on the air saying you're doing it. So it's an interesting point. And if anybody wants to know a little bit more about Sinclair and the background of their political machinations, especially the top executives, because it is, I think, it's still a family-owned, privately held company, right? There was a great article in I think it was GQ magazine or something.
No, I do think it's publicly traded now.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
There's a good article in a recent edition of GQ magazine, like September or October.
Really?
Yes. This multi-thousand word expose about the folks that actually run Sinclair Broadcasting, and it had some pretty interesting dirt, if I may say.
Yeah.
Not something you expect from the high, mighty, and righteous, but Yeah, Sinclair, they're an interesting beast.
And you are listening to Media Geek. My name is Paul Riesemiddle. I'm your host, your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My guest today is John Anderson. He is the creator of DIYmedia.net, which is your source for the best news in pirate and unlicensed radio, as well as an incredible repository of truthful translations.
Yay.
And I actually want to dip into your inventory right now as we take a quick break here.
Okay.
Because it's fun. I want to play more of these on the air. So here's a little bit of George W. Bush, as you really should hear him.
If you think that your kid is not ready for certain kinds of environmental stimulation, I think it's okay to talk about that.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
Death of democracy for the American people. Discredit their narrow ideology. Death of democracy for the American people. We will make this an age of war and misery. Progress must end. I've come here tonight to report to all Americans they are mistaken. They have endorsed representative government, and we've taken steps to correct them. Human beings will not be tolerated. Such an opportunity. Death of democracy for the American people. Discredit their narrow ideology. Death of democracy for the American people. We will make this an age of war and misery. It is the commitment of our government and my personal commitment to wear out the patience of Americans. Our desire to be safe from brutal and bullying oppression will fade and die away. We must keep our focus. Death of democracy for the American people. Discredit their narrow ideology. Death of democracy for the American people. We will make this an age of war and misery. The return of tyranny is right and just. We want its words to have meaning. We'll deny civilized behavior, a base of operation, and export more violence. Progress must end. Killing to achieve our goals. Killing is necessary. Chaos.
Little George W. Bush. In fact, if you go to your second audio channel on your TV, most you don't realize, often it's Spanish translation or whatever, when you're watching a Bush speech, this is what you hear. You actually hear the truthful translation. And that's an outfit called 37 Megahertz, and you can find more of it. You can find hundreds and hundreds such collages, so-called truthful translations, at DIYmedia.net. John, my guest as well, is the guy behind Media Minutes, which is a five-minute media news wrap-up that airs weekly on, 30 stations or so?
40 now.
40 stations now, as well as the flagship Bob McChesney show, Media Matters.
Bracketed by disclaimers.
Locally here on WILL-AM, AM 580, local public radio station here, and heard on the web at their website, WILL.UIUC.edu. So let's go back to your hometown, Madison. Former hometown, not
yes.
where you grew up. But,
yes.
And there's some interesting things, some innovation, shall we say, afoot in radio news. And the thing about radio news is, it doesn't get talked about as much as newspapers or television news, but in fact, radio news is a huge format. It makes a lot of money, mm-hmm. and you go to most major cities, and the top stations, if not the top station, tend to be these 24-hour all radio news or news talk format stations. It is still big business, and it's becoming bigger in Madison and Milwaukee.
Well, they're trying to make more money off of it, I guess, is the way to put it.
That's bigger business, right?
Getting bigger or not, but yeah, The flagship news station in Madison, which is actually the number two or number three ranked station in the overall market, WIBA. It's a conservative news talk format station. They have a morning news program. They have a couple full-time reporters, people that cover like a Capital beat, the guy that covers the Capital and things like that. And then some local talk shows in the afternoon. And then, of course, in the middle, you got Rush Limbaugh, Bill O'Reilly, and all those folks. They have decided to sell the naming rights to their newsroom to Amcor Bank, which is a local, it's a regional banking chain in, I think, Minnesota and Wisconsin. And this is actually not new for Clear Channel owned stations in Wisconsin. A year ago in Milwaukee, The flagship news talk, conservative news talk station, WISN, sold it the naming rights to its news center to Pyramax Bank, which I'd never heard of before I actually found out about this story. And I don't know if there was really any hoopla over that at all. I haven't really gone back and looked and through the trades and see if anybody noticed, but this time around, it seems to have kicked off quite a flurry of commentary and criticism and some analysis by some local bloggers up in Madison doing some good work.
They just ran a series in on the website for the Isthmus,
yes,
which is
thedailypage.com.
Okay, thedailypage.com, which is an alternative weekly there in Madison. Very good one.
Yes, and I almost worked at WIBA.
Yeah, because you worked for a competing station.
Yeah, I ended up working for the competing cluster. At the time, when I first got to Madison, Clear Channel had not bought the Madison Radio Group, which owned six radio stations. And after I got there, they ended up buying the group. And I worked for a cluster of five radio stations that was owned by people headquartered in La Crosse. So I felt a little bit more on the home team than if I had been working at WIBA. Yes, I did work up there, and I interviewed for a job, and I even, you know, they said they what happened was is they gave me the job, and then by the time I got to Madison, they actually gave it to somebody else. But that was my experience.
And that was before they were Clear Channel.
Yeah, that was right before they were Clear Channel, and I'm so happy now, of course, that I completely missed being assimilated into that Borg. Otherwise, I might have more war stories to tell or something. The interesting thing, although, about this whole naming rights controversy is the absurdity of it and the excuses that the management at Clear Channel locally in Madison are putting forth as a reason for doing it. They say that to keep a high quality news operation running, they need to maximize their revenue, which is true because, you know, writing and broadcasting news takes a lot of people, and people cost money. You cannot automate the production of news other than centralizing news production in a regional area, hiring people and then farming them out. And that's exactly what Clear Channel does and has done in the past, both with its operations with WIBA in Madison and ISN in Milwaukee. So, you know, maximizing their revenue, whatnot, that's a really nice excuse, but it's not like Clear Channel has put money or invested money in newsroom operations. One of the things they did when they came in and bought up stations, especially in smaller markets, and my experience has been in Wisconsin, is they killed off the newsrooms. Corporate bean counters came in, looked at each department's you know, balance sheet, and the ones that were running red ink, which guess what, news departments typically do, were axed and replaced with a voice out of Madison or Milwaukee. When I took my writing test at WIBA, it was on a manual typewriter. This was 1997, okay? And I don't think Clear Channel came in and completely uber-modernized the news department there, all right? So it's pretty ludicrous when they say, oh, you know, we're sacrificing
so much.
What
are lots of guys wearing fedoras with a press card stuck in it, smoking stogies and drinking scotch?
Yeah. You know, it was crazy, you know, so that's just a dumb excuse, and it's just absurd. And I think that Clear Channel and specifically WIBA has really shot itself in the foot because they've taken a pounding in Madison.
Madison, which has as a which is known to be somewhat left of center.
As Bill O'Reilly said, during the holiday season, they are communing with Satan. He said this on the O'Reilly Factor sometime this month.
Then why is it so darn cold?
Yeah, well, hell froze over. It's just, it's there. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how long this lasts, how long the deal actually lasts.
And how much, because Amcor is not going to want to take a beating on this either.
No. But, you know, it's not Amcor's reputation that's been sold.
Sure.
You know.
Well, Clear Channel didn't have much of a reputation.
Well, that's
but
true.
The local station does.
It does. And those people are going to be taking it on the chin when they go to Capital News conferences from the rest of the journalistic press corps, which is, you know, slightly larger than it would be for any other city of Madison size because it's a state capital.
Yeah.
And B, I would also like to know if this is a national trend, if newsroom naming rights at Clear Channel stations are up for sale all around the country. And one of the people up in Madison who's been doing some investigative reporting into this has tried to get a hold of Clear Channel Corporate And they got shunted to an outside PR firm that specializes in crisis communications, who said that the company has no comment and that everything is local, blah, blah, blah. And his assumption...
Well, that's what they always say, right. Clear Channel. I mean,
whenever that's their party line.
Yeah, and whenever during the... after, you know, not after 9/11, when there was the list of songs not to be played on the air because it would upset people,
right.
Clear Channel blew that off and said, oh, no, those are local decisions being made,
right.
not a national decision.
Yeah, so... it may not be something that has come down from San Antonio, you know, to all news talk stations. Your newsrooms are for sale, you know. May the highest bidder win. But, you know, if this picks up and becomes a trend, it's just another one of those little pieces of, you know, the decline of mainstream journalism in general.
Well, you know, at one point, the reason why news ran in, you know, red ink, essentially, was because it wasn't looked at as a profit center.
It
was looked at as...
public service.
Public service, and as part of the obligation for having a broadcast license, which my old radio teacher in college called a license to mint money, you put on news on your station so that to keep the public informed. And especially in television, but also especially in major markets, having good radio news was prestige.
Mm-hmm.
It was about... You know, it didn't pay off in direct money and direct revenue. What it paid off in that people look kindly upon your network. They said, you know, as they used to call CBS, the Tiffany Network.
Right.
And 60 Minutes wasn't initially intended to make money so much as it was intended to say, we are the best, most well-produced news outfit on television.
Right.
But that is no longer the case. It is now all about money. And this is the next generation breaking down the wall then. And you wonder... how much critical reportage will there be of Amcor Bank or other financial issues, say things about bank loans, about redlining, and other such practices now that Amcor is going to have its name all over that news?
Yeah, we'll have to see. It'll be interesting to watch, and I think that they're going to be under the spying glass for a while.
I think maybe Madison was thought of as a good, or Milwaukee and Madison thought as a good test market because they're... they're decent-sized markets, you know, but yet if they'd done this in L.A., they did this in New York or Chicago, it would have made a much bigger impact.
I don't know. You know what I almost think? I think that there's one hustler on the sales staff in the southern Wisconsin cluster, you know, that has managed to do deals like this. Maybe it's the same person in the same office. And so maybe there is a chance that this is not going to be some sort of trend or, you know, a dictate, an incentive or anything like that. Maybe it's just one good ad sales hustler. There's a Herb Tarlick out there, you know, kicking booty, taking names in southern Wisconsin. He's on the loose. Beware. He, she, you know, beware.
And so finally, to wrap up here, John, you have some new stats on Pirate Radio.
Well,
last time you were on, you were saying it looked like about the biggest year so far.
It is
the biggest
year.
You've gone and done your computations.
It is the biggest year, and my own statistics on my own website are currently not up to date. I got through the very beginning of December, and through the beginning of December, there were 107. Yes, 106
documented bus.
The total enforcement actions.
Total enforcement actions. I'm sorry, which
done,
includes bus, but includes letters.
Includes warning letters. Includes visits. Includes raids. Includes fines. Includes paperwork saying we're going to fine you and things like that. And that's the highest that I've ever documented in 8 years of documenting them. And there's been a lot more since then. There's actually been a couple of notice of apparent liabilities, which are we're going to fine you letters. That have been issued, one from, I think, the person who is behind 106.9 FM in San Diego has finally received that letter. Someone in New York got one. Two people in New Jersey got warning letters on the 21st. Merry Christmas to them. So I've got a lot of work to do. It's probably going to be something like 120, 130 enforcement actions by the time I'm done fully documenting it for the year. And that's pretty significant. That's a jump of at least 30 from the year before. And an all-time high.
And then Pirate Radio made an appearance on NPR, on All Things Considered, earlier on the 27th of December in a story from their Fort Myers affiliate. Really one-sided. Now, Florida, we've talked about, has a new felony broadcasting law that they can bust pirates with and has more pirates probably per capita than any other state that we know of in the country, often leaning towards an urban and immigrant audience.
Mm-hmm.
And this story, which you can read more about at the Media Geek website, MediaGeek.net, very one-sided, completely anti-pirate. Never talked to the pirates, only talked to the cops and a local Clear Channel representative. Very interesting, though we shouldn't be surprised that NPR would be anti-pirate, since they have been anti-low-power FM pretty much since the start of the network.
Yeah, well, and it was also kind of just an ignorant piece.
Yes.
You know, I can't understand why anybody would be doing this. Well, that's because they're not programming it for you. They're programming it for underserved communities that you're not serving.
For a poor, urban, black audience that is not being served by the so-called hip-hop station run by Clear Channel.
Right. And, yeah, it's... Well, you know, NPR did oppose low-power radio. They've kind of had it in for pirate radio as well. I do believe that it is Clear Channel and some of the other larger radio corporations doing business in Florida that are leading the war, the state-level war on pirate radio there.
It was absolutely Clear Channel, yeah.
Engaging the local authorities and things like that. But NPR engineers have been known to direction-find pirates and report them as well. Yeah.
And
you're never gonna get away from stereotypes.
And
you're
in a state like Florida, there are a lot of underserved communities who really are not getting what they need from their local media, be it radio, be it television, be it otherwise.
It is also a place where pirates themselves do not affiliate with the rest of what we consider to be the micro radio movement.
Right.
So there isn't a lot of news. I mean, I don't even have a lot of connections in Florida to get news on what's happening on the ground.
Well, I talked to a guy who has more micro radio connections earlier in the year, and he frankly was a little scared because
there's so many on the air he can't find a place to broadcast.
He can't find a place to broadcast himself, because, you know. Right. And you have guys who came in from the Caribbean and other places putting on their own stations because they're used to doing so, much less enforcement in places like Haiti or places like Jamaica.
One more thing,
can I squeeze one more thing? Real quick.
NSX, aka Rayon Payne, Florida's most popular pirate. He ran two simulcast pirate stations in Orlando and Miami, 10,000 watts. Has signed a deal to do a TV show on an independent TV station in Orlando. It's going to be a reality TV themed show set in a nightclub.
Well, then that's a lot of these. The Florida Pirates have these strong nightclub connections where they promote parties. And some of them are like alcohol free teen parties. Some of them are more adult nightclub parties.
And they're
but
very
that's really
lucrative.
Where they get their revenue,
yeah.
Right?
Very lucrative. And he's also hoping to score some sort of deal with possibly one of the satellite broadcasters. That's where he's kind of aiming, because he thinks that he calls himself the Black Howard Stern. And he's kind of aiming for the stars in that way. And maybe he could get into the Stern complex over at Sirius, like as a farm team guy. but that's what he's aiming for.
But to play second banana.
He will
there.
Be back on the air January 1st, New Year's Day. He has his inaugural broadcast.
Well, John, thank you. John Anderson, the guy who brings you DIYmedia.net news on Pirate Radio and Truthful Translations, as well as the producer behind Media Minutes, which is a 5-minute news wrap-up at the intersection of media and democracy. Put on by Free Press. Go to freepress.net to listen to that online.
That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'll be back in 1 week with more news of our media environment. In the meantime, check out Media Geek online at www.mediageek.org. There you'll find the Media Geek blog with frequently updated news and views on independent media. You'll also find archive editions of the program in MP3 and the open source Ogg Vorbis format. You can also subscribe to the podcast to have the program automatically downloaded to your computer or MP3 player. The closing music is Fire in the Sky by Adam Luo. Media Geek is produced live at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois. Portions of the program are pre-recorded at Media Geek Studios. Media Geek is also aired on community radio stations KQRP in Salida, California, KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, KRBS in Oroville, California, WSLR in Sarasota, Florida, and WTND in Macomb, Illinois. And Media Geek is free to air on your local, non-commercial, or community radio station, too. Just email Paul at mediageek.org. You can use that email address to send comments, too. I'm always interested to know what you think of the show. Again, that's Paul at mediageek.org. Thanks for tuning in.